Welcome to the city of sin. Living in the city of angels, and you'll still hear them sing. Welcome to the city of sin. Living in the city of angels, and you'll still hear them sing. Lullaby to the night.
The first episode of the official new G-Lu podcast. This is called the G-Lu Show podcast. And even though you're hearing it now on Blog Talk Radio, which is our normal family station that everybody knows, this show will also, this is a new show that we're starting, official podcast, which is different. I'm sure people listening to me now tune with the show that we do every Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. This is going to be a little different. Like I told you about earlier, this show right here is going to be an official podcast. And what a podcast is just a show where we do interviews like we're doing tonight with Miss Queen Jean. It'll be a strictly interview conversation type of thing without minus the music and all the extra stuff. And this will be our expansion from the G-Lu Show. You will now be able to catch this podcast here on Spotify, iTunes, you know, TuneCore, all the sites that have podcasts that you can go find your favorite podcast at, you'll be able to find this one here as well. So we're trying to expand this 2020 division we told you about. So we got a lot of new stuff coming up, and this is one of the first. This is episode one, season one of the G-Lu podcast. And what other way to bring it in with none other than my co-host on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday of the G-Lu Show, the lovely Miss Queen Jean. Welcome, Miss Queen Jean, to the podcast, people. Welcome, Queen. Welcome.
Good evening, G-Lu. Thank you for the applause. I appreciate that.
No problem.
How are you?
I'm good. Like I was explaining to the people, briefly, this is the first episode of the podcast, and you know the podcast is a little bit different from what we do, and I thought what other way to bring it in than interview you, because you're my partner in crime on the G-Lu Show radio show, and you know, I want to start off this podcast by just starting off with interviewing family, you know what I mean, people that are close to me, so we can get their story, because they hear you on the show every week, you know, the radio show. But a lot of people don't know your story. Where did Queen Jean come from? You know, why is she doing the show? What makes her special to do the show? Who is she? Woo, woo, woo. You know, million questions, good, bad, whatever. We're in this world right now. So what better, you know, why not let you tell your own story? You know, since we're going to start this podcast, you know, when I have intimate conversations, I thought I'd start it off with you. So, we're going to do it a little bit different. You know, they know you're Queen Jean. Well, not everybody. The people that listen to the show, they know. But tell the people, you know, give a brief overview of yourself. Who is Queen Jean? You know, Miss Berkeley, I may say.
Okay. First of all, I want to give honor to the Creator for guiding my footsteps and me being obedient to walk in the footsteps. Second of all, I want to thank you, G-Lu, for giving me the platform to be a part of the G-Lu Show and also to be your first guest. And third of all, I would like to thank the audience who's tuning in to find out a little bit more about Queen Jean, who I am, what I'm about, and just a little intimacy about myself. So with that being said, my government name is Jean V. Berkeley. I like to say the V is for victorious. I was born in the 50s, the late 50s, 1959. I was EST in the city of Compton, born and raised there. we moved all over the place. We moved from Compton to Watts to L.A. As a child, me and my siblings. That's how we moved around. And then as I became an adult, I started doing my own thing. A young adult, you know how you say, I can't wait until I get old and I could be out on my own. Well,
right.
I'm sure a lot of us probably not regret it, because the scars are our lessons. They give us something to be a testimony for our younger generation. But it's like, wow, had I known, because life and being a parent or being grown, young adult, doesn't come with a book of instructions. That is so self-taught. And with that being self-taught, you have to pay attention to your surroundings. You have to pay attention to what you're doing. Unfortunately, doing my self-teaching, I didn't pay attention. I was doing my own thing. You know, I was a mother at the age of 18. I had my first child on my 18th birthday. And behind her came two more children. So at the age of 22, I was a mother of three children. And that was back in the early, mid-70s, 77. And then my last child was born in 1982. So I have two girls and two boys. I have a king and two queens. That's part of my court.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I was a single mother. Go ahead.
Okay. No, go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
I was just going to say I was a single mother, and I just did what I had to do. You know, I didn't think about it. I didn't think about, oh, damn, I need to sit down. You know, what am I going to do? I just did what I had to do. And as far as, you know, some mothers like to put their child support on the fathers, I didn't even think about that. I had one father for all my children. And as far as child support, that never entered my head. I felt like, hey, these are my babies. I got to do what I got to do. It's my duty. I born them. You know, I carried them for 9 months. So I got to do what I got to do. So that's a little bit about me.
Right. Okay. I don't know there's much more, but let me go back a bit, because I want to get more in depth a little bit. I know you grew up in Compton. What I wanted to ask you was, what's interesting is, like you said, you were born in the late 50s. So you growing up in Compton, you know, we have a lot of people on here to talk about Compton came up in the eras and different times, but you predate all of that. And I just want to let you, wanted to ask you, what was it like for you growing up in Compton as a young girl, you know, and later seeing what it became, but just growing up in Compton, early Compton, before all the changes and, you know, gangs and all of that.
Well, for me as a child growing up in Compton, I come from a family of 13, and I'm the fifth child. I'm the middle child. And because it was so many of us, because there's so many of us, we were our first friends. You feel me? We were our first friends.
Mm-hmm.
So all the tetherball, all the making your own tetherball out of a pair of pants and stuffing them and socking them, your own volleyball, your own running relays, passing the stick, what they call batons, and things of that nature, that, you know, in the street. You know, like I seen something a couple of days ago that said, who remembers being in the middle of the street playing, and you'd be like, here come a car. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the era I come from. Here come a car. Not where you have to worry about, oh, here comes a car. You got to run and duck. It wasn't like that.
Right.
Back in my era, it was just all fun, and everybody in the neighborhood, like, you know, some of the younger people may hear us seasoned people say that, I remember where we can be in the neighborhood, and if something's going wrong, the neighbor's going to let you know. They're going to pull your coat. They're going to pull your pigtails. They're going to spank your butt. They're going to just tap it. They ain't going to give you a whooping like mom or dad would do, and then they're going to take you to the house and tell it. So it was that type of era. You know, we was more, I believe we were more structured back then. And I grew up on 166 and Hilford. That's, you know, the Nutty Block neighborhood. But at that time, it wasn't a Nutty Block. It probably was Nutty, but it wasn't a Nutty Block Crips, you know. So growing up in that area and then going to school in Compton, like the elementary schools. I went to elementary schools in Compton, and I went to junior high, some of the junior highs when we were to Watts. I went to Markham High. You know, different junior high schools, but my base was Willowbrook, and my high school was Centennial.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice change, actually, until I got in junior high, which they call middle school, but for us, junior high started from 7th to 9th grade. So I didn't notice change right. about anything until I got into junior high and I started, you know, paying more attention to what was going on as far as the gangbangers and the guys wearing the different bandanas, you know, out of their pockets. And honestly, I didn't learn that there was a different side for the red and there was a different side for the blue. You know, I just wasn't into it. I was one of those girls in school who was into her books, who was just, you know, trying to make right. it, trying to please my parents. You know what I'm saying? And until this one dude decided he wanted to disrespect me, so I had to come out of character. And when I came out of character, I did something that was really crazy. That's how I got the nickname Mean Jean. That was my nickname in junior high and high school, Mean Jean. Mm. And from that, okay. as most of us do, when we get a character name, we're going to carry that name. We're going to make it strong. We're going to make it be known and all of that, right?
Right, right. But
fortunately for me, I never got into a fight. I never got into a fist fight with anyone. I mean, it was, you know, haters, people died, you know, the chicks would look at me and want to say what they said with their eyes, but nothing ever came out in a verbal way. So that's when I learned about the gang banging, you know. It's like, so I started hanging with certain sides of the gang and just hanging out. And from that, I was like, okay. And then by me having five brothers, then they got into it. You know, they tried to get into banging and got into the streets of, hustling. One was pimping, you know, so that was the change that I've seen coming up in Compton. And it's changed a lot, you know, even the landmarks. We lost a lot of landmarks in Compton. We lost a lot of landmarks that I grew up with, like the Golden Bird on El Segundo and Central. We lost that. We lost, I think Mamanakis is still there. We lost the Smart and Finals. We lost a lot of stuff in that neighborhood, you know, in that neighborhood, the roller rink that was right on Central.
Yeah.
We lost that, you know. We lost a lot of, you know, landmarks that was good memories and personal for us as the seasoned vets, you know. So that's a major change that I see.
And let me ask you a two-part question, one more thing on Compton. How was it? We know you talked about the neighborhood you lived in and everything. How was it early in your early years? Was it still mixed neighborhood, white still there, or was it predominantly black and Mexican, or how was it early on? And also, what do you think about now? Like you said, a lot of landmarks, a lot has changed in Compton, but you do have the mayor, the female mayor, and what do you think about what she's doing with the city and where the city is now?
Well, as far as when I was coming up, I believe the neighborhood was just mixed. You know, Compton was mixed with the Caucasians and the blacks, and there were some Hispanics. Not as much, but now there's more Hispanics than anything in Compton. You know, it's a lot more
right.
Hispanics in Compton.
Right.
And as far as the mayor, I think that she can do a whole lot better than what she's doing with Compton. You know, like... there's a lot of things that need to be repaired, and I just think she can do a whole lot better. I hear a lot of people speak on it, and I have read it, you know, through social media or even heard it on the news. So according to what they're saying, because I don't, you know, I didn't live in Compton when she was in Compton. I was in, I was in different parts of the world when she became mayor of Compton. But just from what I've read, I think she can do a lot better with what she's doing, because she was picked by the people of Compton, first of all, because of her being a African-American woman, and them thinking that, you know, she's in there, she's from Compton, she know what it's like, she can get in there and do better. But what we have to understand, even when Barack Obama came into president, to be a president, there's only so much, period. It's only so far that they're going to let you go.
Right.
It's not a whole lot that they're going to let you do. They're going to let you just get in there to satisfy, give us a little taste of satisfaction. And then when you get in there, and even our African-Americans who get into those roles feel like they're going to go in there and make this big difference, and they go in and they see. It's not what I thought it was going to be. You know what I'm saying? So as far as she is concerned, that's all I know about her. You know, that people think that she can do a whole lot more in Compton than what she's doing.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, I hear a lot of mixed, like you said. Some people say she's doing okay, but a lot, you know, don't like what she's doing. So, you know, shout out to Compton. We wanted to, you know, by you coming up in Compton, you know, I just wanted some history on Compton when you came up there and how it was opposed to how it is now. You know, I'm sure a lot has changed, but just early on, you know, I was curious to know about that. So thank you for that. And your journey continues on, like you say. Go ahead.
No, I just said Compton would always be home, no matter what.
Okay.
I'm at, Compton would always be home.
Okay. Yeah. Also, like I said, your journey moves around. Like you said, you leave Compton, you go to L.A. then. I know you've been everywhere in L.A. to all the way across the world to Germany. So where did your journey lead you to after Compton?
Well, we moved to, still in my childhood days, we moved to Watts. We stayed in Watts, right where Martin Luther King Hospital is now. It used to be homes there. And they made everybody that lived there move. You know, they just basically kicked us out and tore down the homes and built the hospital there. So we stayed there for a minute. And then we moved to Watts on Santa Ana, right down the street from the Watts Tower. We was able to walk there. So we stayed there for some years. And that's where we was in a two-bedroom house. It was my mom, my dad. And at that time, it was eight of us and sharing a bedroom. So that was where we did most of our bonding. You know what I'm saying? We did most of our bonding. We was, people knew us in the neighborhood because it was, you know, a lot of us. And my dad had started his thing. You know, this is when I started recognizing things with the, he had a crap shack built on the side of the house where he would have his homeboys come over and they'd be playing dominoes, shooting crap, shooting pool. They had a black light. They had a liquor. It was like a little club. And my dad used to take the big old posters because he was a promoter, a club promoter. So he would have us doing that, going around stapling them or nailing them into the, at that time we had the wooden telephone poles. You know what I'm saying? The little old school ones.
Right.
So we would, you know, we would do stuff like that. So that's where most of my childhood, the latter part of my childhood was there. And then we moved to L.A., 47th and Broadway. No, we went to 25th Street, which was downtown L.A., off of Adams. And then we moved to 47th Place between Broadway and Lane. Remember the guy that was on Tweet Show? The guy with the watchtowers. I cannot remember his name right now. And when we were speaking about my grandfather, the Watts Prophet, I think it was. Yeah. And he was speaking of my grandfather having a builder shop, and it was right down the street from where we stayed. And after that, that's when my life started changing. That's when I had got me a guy and knew nothing about being in love. Thought I did, but I was a whole different mindset. I didn't know any better. And that's when I got pregnant, and I checked out of Centennial and checked into Harriet Tubman. And we also stayed on 54th and Budlong as well. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I got pregnant, and we stayed on 54th and Budlong. And had my child and at 18 and stayed with my mother for a minute. And then I started looking for my own spot, and I found my own tilt. And my first tilt was on 28th and Bronson, right down the street from Johnny's and Pastrami's.
Okay.
Across the street from, you know, with a McDonald's right there. It used to be a Pet Boys on the corner. It was an alley right there. And that's where it was just me. Yes, 28th, exactly. 28th, right down the street from Leo's Barbecue, like Tweed was saying last night. That's why I asked him, because Landmarks is over there, too. And a lot of those are even gone right off of Crenshaw. And so I only had my two daughters at that time, and we stayed there for a couple of years. And let me just rewind. Before we moved there, I started working up at USC. I went there as a temporary employee working in financial aid, like for the children that was coming onto the campus. So I did that, and then there was a security guard there. And he walked in and he asked me, what was I going to do after this gig was up? And I said, I don't know. I'm just going to have to keep looking for employment. So he suggested to me to go over to the station, which was called USC Security at that time, to go over to the station and let them know I was interested in a job as a information clerk. So I did that, filled out the paperwork, did the interview, this and that, and I was blessed to get that job. So I started working for USC. Because at this time, we were standing on Walton, right across the street from the USC campus, right off on Walton and 34. That's where we were standing, right off of Jefferson. So we was in the 30 hoods then. And so I started working up at USC. I was 20 years old, so I was only on the welfare for 2 years. So I was 20 years old, and I started working there as an information clerk, and I did that from 1980 to maybe like 1984. And and then after that, same department, I was promoted to a records processor. So that was just dealing with a lot of different things throughout the whole community, dealing with LAPD, insurance things, handling reports. It was a whole different ballgame in that position, but I was promoted to that. And after that, I met a guy, and he joined the military, and that's how I ended up in Germany. So I ended up leaving USC in 1987. And me and my children took flight to Germany. And that's how I ended up in Germany. In Germany for 2.5 years. Came back in 89.
Wow.
And I happened to go up to the university for a Christmas party. You know, I went back to familiar grounds. And I went up there for a Christmas party. And again, I was asked, was I looking for employment? I told them, yes, I am. You know, I was starting, because when I came back from Germany, I was staying with my mom, because that's where my marriage was at. So I was staying with my mom. And, they told me to come back. I did the same thing. And this time I had to go take a background check. That's how things had changed. They just wasn't grandfathering you in because of who you was and the length of employment you had there. That was not happening. So I had to be like any other employee. Background check, interview, testing, all that. So I passed everything and I came back as an unarmed officer. That's what I started back as an unarmed officer in 1990. Is when I got rehired and I was there until 2004. When I was an unarmed officer, I used to come inside sometimes and help with dispatching. So that's how I got promoted to a dispatcher, it was called a communications operator. And I was there until 2004. And then after that, after 2004, and during the time that I was working at the USC, I also was a student at Los Angeles Trade Tape Technical Center. I went there for cosmetology. So I was there for two years and did my thing there. Didn't get my license. I passed a hands-on test, but the written test, I took it twice, and the second time I was 1 point off, and they had no mercy on me. And that was the same date that was my auntie's funeral. This auntie, that's where I get my middle name from, my auntie who had passed. And but I had to go take that test because I wasn't going to miss her funeral. So I didn't, you know, get my license because of that. Yes, I could have went back, but it was not a big deal for me because I was doing that for other reasons, not for career reasons, because I had a career job. Then I got married again, divorced the first husband, got married to a second husband, and that was that marriage right there was very, and I met this dude up at USC, and that marriage there was a very domestic violent one. It was a very violent mess, marriage. And at the time, during that marriage, and I would go back to work, and people can tell that things was happening that shouldn't have been happening. And what hurts me most about being in that marriage is that I didn't think about my children. It just didn't come to my mind that my children are experiencing this with me. They're going through the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Because had I had that mind frame, I wouldn't have stayed in it as long as I did, but I did. And then I got up out of that, and life went on, and then I ended up leaving USC, and I moved to Carson, and I bought me a home in Carson, and I opened up a daycare, and I had my daycare for 10 years. I had my daycare for 10 years. It was a 24-hour daycare. I was licensed for 14 children. And it was one of the best careers that I could have had. I learned so much. I took a class.
And now you're a businesswoman, officially.
Yes, I'm officially a businesswoman, licensed, fictitious name, all that, you know, everything you got to go through. And I had got me a van, got me some magnetic stickers made, put it on my van. It was called Mama Jean's Daycare. And the reason that it was called Mama Jean's Daycare, because my mom's name is Jean. And I lost my mom in 2003. My mother was my heart, my first love, my best friend, and losing her was a very painful thing for me. I mean, it still hurts to this date. But so our friends and all our neighbors called my mother Mama Jean. Everybody knew her as Mama mm-hmm. Jean. My mother's homegoing service was at least 300 to 400 people, and we was all in awe, like, wow. But when it's, you know, when it's nine of you all that grew up together and you have friends and you got friends, there's nine of us with all these friends and all of us working. So, you know, it was people coming from
everywhere.
So then, I got the daycare, and it was 24 hours, and it was one of the best things that could have happened for me as a, I don't want to say it pacified me, but it gave me nourishment. You know what I'm saying? Like, what I went through with my mother, losing my mother in 2003, getting a home in leaving USC in 2004 and actually getting a home in 2004 as well. It helped me a lot, you know, having those babies with me and meeting a different type of people, because through daycare you meet all kind of parents. You know, you meet all kind of parents. And a strange thing is that when I would do my interviews or when a parent would come, and what made me start doing this, I had a parent that says, well, she didn't like how I ran my daycare. So what I started doing after that was asking everybody that came for an interview, what are you looking for in a daycare? You know, just to save us both times. And if you wasn't looking for what I was going to offer, I would just tell you, well, this is not the daycare for you, because all money ain't good money. You know what I'm saying? All money is not good money, and the state will pay you and you get paid good, but sometimes it just wasn't worth it, because these are the mothers who think because they're on the program and you getting the money from the program that they can just come at you any kind of way. I wasn't that type of daycare provider. I was a good daycare provider. I keep in touch with some of the kids now. Some of the girls follow me on Instagram, follow me on Facebook. Their parents do. So it was a beautiful thing, and I was 24 hours. And, you know, it wasn't structured like your normal daycare. I did do economics there. I did teach them some things before they went to school. And I cooked.
Did you have, like, staff as well, or was it just you?
I did at one time, but I didn't like the way the kids weren't interacting with the staff. You know, I had two people working for me, and I didn't like the way the kids, if my kids weren't comfortable, it wasn't going to be, because my babies had to be comfortable, you know, and they weren't comfortable with the ladies that I had there. And one lady, I would let her bring her child to the daycare because she didn't have a babysitter to keep her child, and she felt like her child was privileged, that her child can do this and the children at the daycare couldn't. And I would just sit back and I would just watch. I wouldn't say anything. You know, I would just watch for a couple of months. And then when I seen the children changing, when their behavior started changing, and that's when I knew this wasn't going to work out. So, yeah, I had employees. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have 14 kids, you have to have employee.
That's what I had.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I never got on the food program or none of that. I just bought my own food. You know, I spent $400 to $500 a month on food. I didn't want to deal with the food programs, because that's just like being on the having a foster care. They come in and they check, and I don't want to go through all that, you know.
Right. So you said you had the daycare for 10 years. What made you want to give that up or stop, or something that happened, or you just tired of it?
Yeah. Actually, it's a funny thing.
I mean, I don't
want to
get into business. I just want to know how
it's okay. I'm very transparent. It's
okay.
All good. You know, because everything that I've been through in life has made me Queen Jean. You understand? So it's all good, because we all have been through things in life. Some are just not as transparent. They don't want to know, but I don't want to tell it. But, you know, I'm transparent. So what happened was, you have to be careful what you speak out loud, because the Most High is always listening. And you can speak things into existence, as I did. And because I was speaking things, I started losing children slowly. You know, I lost one month, and then a couple of more months I lost children. And it was because the first child was because she said she couldn't afford the cash fee, which my cash fee was very inexpensive compared to what other daycares were doing. And another parent was saying that she didn't want to stay in her business anymore because her income had changed. So that was three kids that I lost. And then they just start slowly, falling off, you know, And I noticed that. So where I was staying at, buying a home in Carson is expensive. It was over $3,000 and some change. And at the time, by my money dwindling down because I wasn't doing what I should have been doing as far as stacking, you know what I'm saying? So I had to give it up. So I gave it up. But then I also spoke into existence. So I said that I would just say, God, close that door. And when the Most High closed the door, you keep that door shut, you bolt it up, and you run. You get away from it. You don't try to force it to be, you know, to stay open. So the door was closed at the bottom line. That's how I feel that the Most High just closed it. I spoke on it. Okay, well, let me just close this. And then from there, I moved to Vegas with my daughter. And I was staying with my daughter for, that's how I ended up in Vegas. I was in Vegas for about 9 months. Did not like it there at all. It was the worst experience of my life. And it had nothing to do with my daughter, my family there. It was just the worst experience of my life. The weather was just too much for me. I'm not an outdoors person. I don't do casinos and stuff like that. So, you know, it wasn't enjoyment for me. And then I went there unemployed. So I was looking for employment. I did get an interview, but I was blowing, so I failed the drug test. And do you know how disappointed I was with myself for failing a drug test, a weed test? Because I think I was in my mid-50s, and I was like 50-something-year-old ass failing a damn drug test for a job. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. That's what I told myself. I was so disappointed in me. So I then, whenever you want to take a break, let me know because I'm going to keep on rambling.
No, go ahead. I'm just like, wow. Go ahead.
Yeah. So then from there, I went home, and I tried to be slick and use my granddaughter's urine. But I guess, I'm not a slick person. I should have learned that when I tried to shoplift from Zodis and got busted. I'm not built for that. That's not me. I'm not a slick person. I got busted.
She's giving it up, y'all.
You know, I'm giving it up. I said I'm transparent. You know what I'm saying? And this is what taught me. You know, this is what taught me to not do things like that. And I have 8 grandchildren. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I have to let them know these are not the things you want to do. You got to be able to tell them something positive for them to not make these mistakes. You know, to at least think about it. Oh, this happened to my nana, so I don't know. So anyway, that didn't work, and I didn't pass the test. So I went home, and I went walking because I love to walk. And I went walking, and as I was walking around the park up there, I'm listening to some music, and Spirit came straight to me and told me to go back to that place, take all that MJ, give it to your daughter, start putting in applications online, get your butt back to California and make a change in life. And that's exactly what I did. And I moved back to Cali, stayed with my brother in Long Beach for a minute, got me a job at Home Depot, another best job because it was something totally different. I worked warehouse overnight. I loved it. And then my daughter had her heart attack, and she needed me out here, and that's how I ended up out here in North Carolina. And I've been here for 5 years. And had I not went through all of that and became a member of Facebook and met Baron Stevenson, Big Flossie of Long Beach, who sent me a flyer. he sent me a flyer about the G. Lou show. And I looked at it a couple of times and just ignored it. And then I said, let me check out the G. Lou show. They said, oldies, fabulous lowrider, oldies on Sundays. That's my thing. I love me some oldies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was became an avid fan of the G. Lou show, calling in, giving out my requests. G. Lou gave me a good compliment on my voice. I mean, he made me feel like, wow, I never even knew I had that type of voice, so being on the radio as a dispatcher, the officer used to tell me, we know your voice. You know, you got this type of voice, Gene. You know, you got the best voice as a dispatcher. So that kind of made me feel good. So when you said that, I was like, oh, okay. So becoming a part of a fan of G. Lou show, and then you approaching me, you know, asking me to be your music director for Sunday. I took that on and like, yes, you know, that was like right up my alley. Yeah, that was
right,
like,
right.
What? He wanted me to be, you know, it was like somebody said, we're going to the candy store and we're going to get us 20 packs of Nylators, which was 5 cents at the time. You know, let's go get the chocolate ones and, you know, all the flavorful ones. So that's how
right.
I felt when you asked me to do that. So, I did that and was still calling in. And then when you asked me to be a co-host, only the creator knows, G. Lou, how I felt when you asked me that. It was such an awesome feeling because it was something new to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was foreign to that type of broadcasting or even being, and didn't even realize that you're on globally, that people are really listening. You know, how naive of me, not
right.
even think like that, you know what I'm saying? So, and then
right.
I became your co-host. And then you asked me about Wednesdays and Fridays. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like unbelievable. I'm serious. It was just so unbelievable. I was in an awe, so humbled and so thankful because, again, only the creator knows where this journey is leading. And this is part
right.
of where this journey is leading, where it has led me to be your co-host on three nights and also to be your first interviewee on your podcast. So this is where the journey has led me to be. And the journey of you asking, you know, Baron introducing me and then you asking me to do these things or if I wanted to, you know, invited me to be on the platform or the squad or the G. Lou show, it's one of the best things that could have happened in my life. Truly.
Wow.
It is.
I'm honored
yes.
to have, you know, given you the opportunity. And, you know, since you've been on the show, it's been a great show. I knew it would be, you know, it turned out to be real great. Everybody loves you. You know, it's like family now, and then it's a great addition to the show. I want to ask you, when you first started on the show, though, how did you feel? It was really Sundays, you know, being around, you know, it was a bunch of dudes, and you know how Hank and Floss get, they over talking, and you know, you had to go through it a little bit. How did you feel about when you first started on the show? Could you handle it or what, you know?
Well, when I first started out on the show, I felt a little nervous. So you, mm-hmm. the three of you guys, made me feel comfortable. Being on the show with all guys, that's one of the coolest things that you can be, a woman like myself can be on. Because all I ever worked around was guys. So I know how to deal with guys. And then, like I said, I got five brothers and come from a family of guys, my cousins. There's a lot of guys in our family, a whole lot of guys. So that was cool, listening to the Jive Talk and the way that Baron and Hank welcomed me, it was just, you know, it made it easier for me to be on the show. And, yeah, when they're talking, I'm the type, I let them talk. I just sit back and I listen. And when I need to speak, then I speak. So
mm-hmm.
being a part of the show with those guys and just being a part of the show, it like I said, it's an amazing feeling is a natural, it's a high for me. I get an adrenaline
right.
when I know, okay, it's time to do a show. You know, it's like, okay, I get serious about it because to me, it's serious. To other people, it's like, oh, blog talk, well, whatever. You know, you take everything that you do in life, you got to perfect it, be the best at it, and be comfortable doing it, you know?
Right.
And that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with the G. Lou show.
Yeah.
It's a blessing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. It's a blessing to have you as well. You know, like I said, a great addition to the show. You bring a lot of just great energy, spirit, you know, and then you have the announcements and, you know, you promote the show. And it's just like it's a real blessing to have you a part of the show. Let me
thank
ask
you
this, dealing with the show, too. I'll ask you two parts. You know, how do you feel? We talked about Hank and Flossie. How do you feel when like Malik comes onto the show and he could be controversial or he could be real insightful? How do you feel? And did you have to get past, you know, some of the stuff he says, or how did you feel about Malik? Cause I know before you knew Malik, but probably in a different light, you know. So when he comes on the show, how do you feel about Malik? And also, I want to ask you something. Answer that first. I want to ask you something else, too. I forgot.
Okay, as far as Malik, when I was just a caller and Malik would come on, I would, you know, it would just be full of laughter because he has that in him. You know what I'm saying? That's part of who Malik is. And then becoming actually on the squad, being on the show, sometimes it can be a little overbearing at the beginning of Malik and the way that he would speak, because he's a very intelligent man. I know he's very intelligent. But as you get to know Malik, hey, Malik is one of the coolest dudes. You know what I'm saying? He's a humble cat. He really is. I love Malik's personality because Malik is Malik. And you can't knock somebody for being who they are. You know what I'm saying? That's Malik. Malik is Malik. And I love Malik for being Malik. And Malik ain't going to change for no damn body, no matter how you feel. I'm Malik. I'm not changing for you because get with the, I won't say it the way he would say it, the program, you know, or you going to get some
in a
different tone. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, when you're doing any type of job, you deal with personalities. Everybody have a personality. You either accept it or you don't accept it, you know, and you learn when to speak when you're dealing with certain personalities. You learn when to say something. You learn to sit back and let them say their thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I deal with that with Malik.
Okay. Great answer.
Malik is not,
also,
you know,
I want to
yeah,
ask.
Yeah, Malik is a good person.
Yeah. Dr. Ism, the LA Peacemaker. What up, Malik? Hey, I want to ask you as well, how did you feel when you started doing the other shows, the Wednesday and Friday, where Wednesday is like West Coast hip-hop, you know, a lot probably you didn't know about before that and having to do your research, but adapting to it, and it seems like you love it. But how was that doing those shows and the Friday show opposed to Sunday with oldies, like you know?
Yeah, for both of those shows, I'm just going to combine them because I do the same thing for both. In the beginning, it was intense because it's like, okay, I would see the flyers. I was like, who is this guy? You know, who is this? And when I would ask my children who was born in the 70s or 80s, they was like, I don't know who that is. It wasn't, who was it out there in Wu-Tang? Then they couldn't tell me nothing, you know. That's when I had to say, okay, well, you got to do your own research. You know, you got to do your research. And I started doing my research and for both shows, Fridays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And I tell you, again, I love it because I'm learning. I'm learning and I'm meeting artists, whether they're underground, hip-hop. You know, I'm meeting some of the best. So I love it. And like I said, it was a little intense when I first started doing it because the research is like, okay, sometimes there was nothing. You can't find nothing. So I learned how to manipulate it. I learned how to, if I couldn't find nothing, you just listen. You be more ears when the guest is talking. You learn from that. And that way you learn how to ask them questions from what they're talking about. So that was something for me to learn as well. You know, because it's a whole different ball game, G. Lou. You know, doing what I'm doing is a whole different ball game from anything I've ever done. But I love it because it's making me use my brain. I got to use my brain.
Okay.
You know, I have to think.
Okay. That's what's up with the G. Lou show. Let me ask you this. What is your opinion on religion? Because I know you're very spiritual, but like, what's the difference as far as religion and spirituality to you, in your opinion?
Okay, don't come for me, y'all, because this is my opinion. The foundation of religion was laid for us as children. My mother's father was a preacher. He had his own church, so he was in church all the time. Church of God in Christ. So we was taught, you know, the word and you know, being taught the word from the Bible, it's like you would be so afraid to just live life now as an adult. You know, you're not going to wear no makeup. You ain't going to put no lipstick on. You ain't going to have nothing above your knees. You ain't going to have nothing tight. You know, you ain't going to tatch yourself up, none of that stuff, because it's terrible. So as I started getting older, I shied away from religion and began to put myself more in the spiritual realm, start learning spirituality, because to me, spirituality is freedom. You're more free. It's not that you don't believe in anything bigger than you, and you don't believe in the word, but you don't imprison yourself. You don't enslave yourself to where you're just not mentally, where you're just afraid to live. You know, live life. So it's
okay.
More.
But let me ask you this. So I'm asking now, what's the difference between religion and spirit? Since you said you release yourself from religion and it's spiritual. So, like you said, it doesn't mean you don't believe in anything. So who do you believe in, God just as God or no, or how does that work?
I believe in,
I know it's the most high,
high,
but is that God or is that?
Yeah, that's
break
God,
that down
the most high, the creator, God. You know, there's only one God, honestly, but everybody has a name that they call their God. So that's all good. You know, I don't do religious
okay.
debates, but that's what I believe. And
you believe
know,
in
I
God.
Don't believe that.
Let's get
yeah, I don't believe that.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe in God, and I don't believe that God is a he or she, because that means God is human, right? Because you're a
okay.
he, I'm a she, and we're both humans. I believe that God
right.
is a spirit, you know,
okay.
and the spirit lives within, you know, and
okay.
it's just what you do with the spirit that lives within. That's what I believe, and that's how, and it frees me. Dealing with life on a spiritual level like that. You know right from wrong. You know how to treat people. You know, and for me, that's how I live my life. I know right from wrong. I know how to treat people. I do my yoga. I meditate. I take my nature walks. I call them nature walks because when you're walking, you're around nature, and I meditate then too as I'm walking. You know, I'm having a conversation, a one-on-one with the Most High. I'm having a conversation with God. I pray throughout the day because I definitely believe in prayer because, and let me just say a little bit about why I strongly believe in prayer. My mom was in a coma for 7 months, and the doctors had gave up on my mom, and they gave my mom a weekend to live. Before I went to go see her in ICU, every day I would go up to the chapel, and I would just pray. I would pray, 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 pray. I felt like I was begging God, please don't take my mom away. I wanted to see her green eyes, hear her raspy voice. I wanted the essence of her to still be with us. So with that being said,
right.
Me standing in prayer, and we had church people praying. We had people praying from everywhere. So there was a lot of prayer going up. And like I said, the doctors had said she was going to make it for the weekend. I didn't take the doctor's word. My siblings was ready to start making funeral arrangements. They thought I was losing my mind, whatever, whatever, whatever. So I went back up to ICU. And I'm sitting up there with my mom, and guess what? My mom comes out of her coma, and I'm the one sitting there with her. I tell you, I couldn't wait to get back on that elevator and go down there and tell them, Mama's out of her coma. You should have seen them all trying to rush into the elevator. And they're all up there, and they were just looking at my mom and looking at me like, you know, damn. Well, yeah, you know, I believe that because my mother fell into her coma. I went to the angel pens. And gave them to all my brothers and sisters and told them, where it is every day that she comes to the hospital, why Mama's in her coma, because she's going to come out. They always thought I was tripping, but I've always been told I was different from them. So they all thought I was tripping and whatever, whatever. And I would do an angel pen check, make sure you have your angel pen on. If you didn't, I'm going to get you another angel pen, because you're going to wear that pen when you're up here in the hospital visiting our Mama. That's going to happen, period. And well, Mama came out of her coma, and they was up there, and I told my mom, I said, them Negroes was down in that lobby planning your funeral when she was able to really, you know, a couple of months later. And she said, sure enough. That's what she would say, sure enough. And I said, yeah, sure enough. But then in 2003, that's when we lost our mom. So the Lord gave her back to us for 6 years. I was okay with that. I mean, I was grateful for that. But when we lost her, it was a whole different ball game, you know, and that's when I was talking about the daycare and this and that. So, Prayer is very powerful. is very powerful, and I encourage anybody to pray, you know, because we get caught up in the pain of things that's happening now. But then if you think back, and I believe Hank said this one time on the show, if you think back to something you went to a couple of years ago and you didn't think that you was going to overcome that, but you did, you got to know that's God in prayer. You have to know that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know that that was God in prayer that brought you through. So, you know, I believe in God and I believe in prayer. And okay. For me, that helps me with my spirituality. Spirituality is just freedom for me. It's a sense of freedom to me versus religion, because I'm a person that takes things literally. So if I got into the religion part of it, you probably would have never met me. I would probably be on social media, even though there's people on it, but I'm talking about me being a religious, but I would have been a religious fanatic, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it just would have been, I would have been one of those people like, man, here she come. They see you coming. They want to run the other way. So.
Hmm. Okay. So, yeah, because you're a very spiritual person and everybody gets that vibe from you. So, you know, I wanted to ask you that just so we can know what drives you from a spiritual realm, you know, and religion versus spirituality. And so great answer. I want to ask you this. What do you think? Not what do you think? What can you let the people know? You know, we talked about a lot of things tonight, but what can you let the people know something about Queen Jean that they don't know? You know, because they, like I said, again, they hear you on the show. They get, you know, cool vibe and, you know, everything about you. You post stuff on social media, but what do you want the people to know or take from this interview about Queen Jean that they don't know, that you would share with them?
Well, as you said, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I love meditating. I love yoga. I love taking walks. I'm a romantic at heart. You know, I'm the type of woman that you don't have to be driving a Bentley and driving anything fancy. If Pintos was out, you can still be driving a Pinto. I like to go to the parks and go on old school picnics. They can be the picnics where you got a bag, a round bag, and you know, plastic bag, and you taking everything up out of there. I'm cool with something like that because I'm not a materialistic person, because I didn't come from materialistic family. We didn't grow up like that. So I'm down with growing with a man, you know, elevating with a king. That's cool with me. I can meet you and you can have just a little bit of nothing, but we can make that little bit of nothing out of something very huge. We can work together. So that's who I am. I'm a single woman because I don't like to play games. I don't like to be played on because I've been played on enough in my life. So I'm single because of that. And the way the world is today and some of these, you know, brothers out here today, it's hard to tell who's genuine, less known to tell who's the man, you know. So
right.
I'm a homebody. I love to be at home. I love bonding with my grandchildren. I love music. I love to read. And I just love being around genuine people. I don't club, you know. If I had a king, I would go out to a club with my king, and I like lounges. I like jazz lounges. I like to go sit in something, you know, a little bit more mature, adult. I mean, I'm in my sixth decade, so I don't have time to get on the floor and be twerking and this and that. But don't get it twisted. I can do a little twerk. I can do a little dance, crib dance, whatever dance. I can get out there and do those things too. But I like to basically just sit back, you know, nice mood, and listen to some jazz or some good oldies and just chill, you know, have a drink, stimulating of the mind, and just relax. You know, that's basically who I am. I wanted to say this. For me, love for me is that you don't love me with your heart or mind. The heart can stop and the mind can forget. So I prefer to love with our souls, you know, because a soul never forgets. And a soul never forgets or stops. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I feel about the word love. And people throw love around like it's an apple, or I shouldn't use an apple as an example, a softball. They throw love around like it's time to play volleyball. Love is real, you know. I'm a very emotional person. I'm a nourishing person, very nourishing. And sometimes that can get me in an emotional state because I care. You know, if you come to me if I can, I'm there, no matter what it is. I'm there. I don't like to hear people saying they're hungry or they're struggling. That bothers my soul. So I help out the best way that I can. So I'm a very nourishing and caring person. I'm a very down-to-earth person, one of the most genuine people that you would want to know. I'm cool. I know I'm cool, and I'm a queen, and I know that I'm a queen. I may not be a queen in some other people's eyes because everybody got their own definition as a queen, but I'm a queen. I've been a queen for a long time. I'm a Nubian queen. That's what I am. I'm a warrior queen. That's my definition of it, not nobody else's. If you view me in a good way as a queen, thank you very much. I'm humble, you know. Namaste for that, you know. But that's who Queen Jean is, you know. A grandma, you know, a nana, and a mother of three. My family, I have 14 in my family, my circle. If it was not for me, there would be none of them. So, and I love my family, ride and die for my family. You know, my grandchildren and my children, their spouses, they mean the world to me. They mean the world to me. So that's who Queen Jean is.
All righty. Well, I think we're going to end this episode on that note. And also, first, let me say this. Thank you, Queen Jean, for being a part of the first G Lou Show podcast. And again, thank you, everybody who listened. And this show will be it will be here, but it will be edited and everything. It will be rebroadcast on Spotify and iTunes and wherever you find your favorite podcast at. So please support it when we put it out. I'll let you know when it's out. I want to thank Queen Jean for joining him on this first episode. We got some new episodes coming with some more lovely ladies coming up in a couple weeks. So just support this podcast, the G Lou Show podcast on Anchor. Shout out to Queen Jean again for joining me tonight. Queen, also I want to ask you, since it's the end of the show, if there was maybe one or two songs that you could sum up your life to and just, you know, these are the songs that,
yes,
you know, I'm a go out with. What are those songs?
Yes.
We want to play them to sum up the Queen Jean summary.
The first one is Billy Paul, This Is Your Life. And the second one would be Denise Williams, Black Butterfly. And I just want to say,
wow,
before we go off air, to everybody who tuned in, thank you so very much. And I hope you enjoy the intimate conversation with me and getting a little more intimate with knowing who Queen Jean is. You can check me out on Facebook as Jean V. Berkeley and on Instagram, Queen Jean of the G Lou Show. You can learn more about me through my posting as well. And thank you as well, G Lou, for having me as your first guest on the podcast. I'm very humbled. Thank you.
Yes.
And
yes.
Everybody,
you're welcome.
Love, blessings.
All righty, there it is. Episode 1, Season 1 of the G Lou Show podcast by Anchor. Queen Jean, my special guest. I am G Lou. Thank you, everybody, who tuned in. We'll be back next week with a new episode, and you can catch us on Sunday nights as well. OG Sundays, Fabulous Slow Rider Oldies, West Side Wednesdays, and Flashback Fridays on Blog Talk Radio, also on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, The G Lou Show. This show is sponsored by 93.3 Tweed FM Ism. Thursday night, Sweet Cadillac After Six Cruise Mix, and West Side Car Club, and Dee Dee Harrison.
It's your life you're giving. Don't you think it's time you ask yourself?
Come to see just how proud and beautiful.